My thought process is I'm providing investors an opportunity, providing people an opportunity to put their money that's safe and secure and backed by real estate with excellent returns. If that's your mindset, it's a different mindset than, will you invest in my deal? Or I need you to invest in my deal. Or this is a great deal because, you know, no, it's an opportunity, right? They've got a problem. The problem is they've got money, right? And they're looking for a great place for their money to protect it, to provide them a good return. I've got a solution.
Tim is one of the most authentic and genuine people I've ever met.
Sincerely believe he's coming from a position of giving, and that means a lot.
You're going to make huge progress.
Welcome, everybody, to today's Capital Raising Show. I'm your host, Tim Mai. And today, I have an amazing guest on the line with us, Mr. Todd Dexheimer. Todd is the principal of Endurus Capital and Vital Care Living, started investing in 2008. Him and his company has owned over $500 million of multifamily and senior housing and commercial real estate, and has raised nearly $80 million of private capital. Todd has done a lot of different types of deals, including 150 flips, 20-unit mobile home park, a ski resort as well, and built his rental portfolio. Today, Todd focuses on syndicating value-add commercial real estate in emerging markets. Todd is also the host of the podcast Pillars of Wealth Creation and is passionate about teaching others how to create a business and how to take control of their finances. He's especially passionate about teaching underserved youth and adults how to create financial independence and security. So let's give Todd a big welcome, y'all. Woo-hoo-hoo! All right, Todd, I am super excited to hear about your journey. Let's just start there. If you can share with us a little bit about, you know, about how you got started in real estate investing, and especially how did you transition into this multifamily commercial real estate space?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Look, I really appreciate your energy. So you've got some great energy. I love it. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
Hopefully you can relax and have some fun today and, you know, do something to celebrate. But you kind of gave a good introduction. I was a high school teacher, high school industrial tech teacher. So I was teaching like the wood shop and metals and that type of thing. Did what most people do, you know, go to school, get a job. That was my dream. My passion, this teaching is you're going to be molding young people, right? And making a massive difference in this world. And I was super excited to do that. And then I got into teaching and I realized nobody wanted to be there. They didn't care about what I had to say. And I was molding some people, but most people are like, screw this guy. I don't want to be here. Right. So it just wasn't kind of the environment I thought it was going to be. It wasn't this, just life-changing thing that I thought I was going to be involved in. And I enjoyed parts of it. I definitely did, but it just wasn't for me. So very quickly, I think it was probably like the third day of school for teaching. And I come home and I tell my wife, I got to figure out what I'm going to do when I grow up. Because this isn't it, you know? So I was like, what am I going to do? I'm going to, you know, go back to school, become an architect. I can do construction. I can do all kinds of stuff. And I started reading these books and it was all these real estate books, these business books. I'm like, man, this stuff is exciting. Like, this is really cool. And I kept on reading more and more real estate books and getting kind of, man, this real estate, it makes so much sense. 1 + 1 = 2. I can see how that works, right? I understood the cash flow model. That got me excited. And so started in that journey. And it was, you know, timing was the worst timing in the world, but it was also the best timing in the world. Now looking back, hindsight, everybody's like, oh, it was perfect. Because I started in 2008. I actually started studying in like 2006, 2007. And then finally got the courage enough up to start investing in 2008. And that's something that I think is super important for people to know. Like, look, this isn't, it doesn't, if you, especially if you're first starting this journey, you're like, man, I've been at this forever. I've been looking at books and reading stuff for 3 months. When am I going to get my first deal? Like, look, I was looking at books and studying and like for a year and a half, probably two years before I got my first deal. Right. And so be patient. You know, I know you will like see all this social media jazz about everybody buys it, but be patient. So, 2008, like I said, it was the worst time and the best time. The world was literally imploding. Everybody was running for the hills. People told me I was stupid. I was crazy. You'll never make money. This is the worst time to be involved in real estate. Values will never get back to where they were, you know, you heard it all. Like there's many people. I remember saying to somebody like, yeah, I know values are down, but they'll be double what they were, you know, give it 20, 30 years. And they're like, yeah, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Real estate will never get to where it was in 2006, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, quite frankly. But that's just how it was. So 2008 started buying and bought three properties all at once. We're very, very close to each other. They weren't the same day, but very close to each other. One was a property that my wife and I lived in to flip. It was a 203B loan. The other property was a property I was flipping. Ended up being a flop, by the way. Worked on it night and day and made like, I don't know, $2,000. So made like 60 cents an hour type of thing. The other one was a rental property and ended up being able to renovate it, rent it out. I bought it for like 60 grand, renovated for another 15, did all the work myself with some of my family as well. And then refinanced it. And that turned the light bulb. It was like, whoa, this is possible. And this is 2008. So the world was crumbling. You couldn't get loans at that point in time. At least that's what everybody told you. I was able to refinance this and I figured out I could buy these properties, renovate, get them rented, and then get good permanent financing on them. Oh, good is all relative, right? At that point in time, good. And now there's the light bulb moment. And so I started buying these rentals. I ran out of money after buying about six of them. And so I started flipping houses. That was 2009. I started flipping houses. Like you said, flipped well over 100 houses. Built a 1-4 family rental portfolio of over 100 houses, 100 properties, duplexes and single families and fourplexes and stuff like that. And then about 2015, 2016, I'm like, I got to do something different. I can't keep doing this. I actually had a business partner too, and we kind of went separate ways and started the multifamily route. And that's where I'm at today, buying bigger multifamily properties, 100 unit, typically 100 unit plus, some commercial. So yeah,
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, great timing, both times, right? Getting into the real estate space in 2008, when a lot of, like I got started in 2002. So 2008, I was crying. I lost a ton of money. I was doing a lot of fix and flips. So I lost a ton of money. But yeah, I mean, you coming in 2008, you know, the great time to get into business. And then again, you know, riding the multifamily wave in 2015. That's just amazing timing. So you pretty much, I mean, you grew pretty organically, right? Like, you know, from single family to small multi to bigger multi, and you know, even into ski resorts. So share with us about that. Like, how did you get into that?
I've never been a person to shy away from an opportunity, and that's, so I consider myself a value add real estate investor. I don't consider myself a multifamily investor, although multifamily is our bread and butter. We're still value add. So we purchased a 100,000 square foot retail shopping center last year in a fantastic location. And we're just, it's absolutely crushing it. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to buy a shopping center. No, this, like, you look for value add opportunities. And if you, so a lot of people are like, oh, don't get distracted by the shiny object. And I agree with that. But you also have to understand, like, stay in your lane. And my lane is value add commercial real estate. And so that was back before I was value add commercial. I bought the ski resort. We actually just stumbled upon this property. My business partner at the time did. He was hunting at the neighbor's property, and he's like, "Viral, you know, this looks like a great property." So I went and talked to the owner, and he's like, "What's going on here? You got chairlifts, you got this huge building. Like, what's happening?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, it used to be a ski resort, and it shut down. It shut down back in like 2007 or so, and it's been sitting vacant. And it was perfect timing. He was driving his mom to the doctor, and the mom saw this barn as they were driving there that it just like tipped over. And she's like, son, we have to sell Steeplechase. The same thing is going to happen to our building." And then we come knocking on his door like 2 days later.
Wow.
It's a divine intervention, right?
Right.
We were able to pay him, you know, what he wanted, which was like 454,000. Ended up getting 100% financing. This was back in like 2013. Got 100% financing from a bank because it appraised for $900,000. And then decided this just wasn't for us. It was too much of a distraction. Did some repairs to the lodge, and you know, the roof was leaking, so did some stuff like that. And then sold it to a guy who's actually doing really good with it right now. For, I think we sold it for like $9,950 to him.
That's awesome. So in your business, are you the one that's in charge of like investor relations and capital raising?
Yeah. So that's kind of my main. I got probably two main roles in the company, I do have two main roles in the company. One is the investor relations, the capital raising aspect, and the other is the construction aspect and kind of overseeing a lot of the construction. Now we have people that also do that. We have an investor relations in our company. She happens to be my wife. So I can't say anything bad about her. She's amazing. And then we have another gentleman who oversees the construction as well, but I kind of oversee it from the top down.
I see. Okay. And was like, in terms of syndications, is that when you got into the big multifamily, is your first time syndicating?
Yeah. Definitely. And I'd been raising money actually on my fix and flips, raising a lot of passive money on my fix and flips, even some of my smaller rentals. I've been wanting to buy multifamily for years, just didn't understand how to do it. Like, I'm not some rich guy. How can we do this? And there wasn't nearly the information that there is out there now. You know, it was just kind of starting to get out there a little bit more in like 2015, 2016. But when I first wanted to do it back in like 2008, 2009, there just wasn't anybody talking about it. So I just really understand it. I remember doing my first capital raise on an apartment, and they talked about said you can do a 70-30 split. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. So I talked to the investor. I said, I'll give you 30%. I'll give you 30%. I'm going to take 70%. You put the money down, I'll run the deal. He said, okay.
Nice.
So we did that deal. I took a 70-30 split, 70 to me, 30 to him. No prep. Because I didn't know what I was doing. This is back in like 2012 or something like that. But then I learned a little bit more. I can't believe he did the deal. He ended up making, I still ended up paying him like 25% on his money.
Nice.
That's how good that deal ended up turning out. So 2000, you know, fast forward to 2016 is kind of the first syndication, 2016, maybe it was even 2017, first syndication.
Gotcha. Okay. And how big was that first syndication? Like how
84 units.
80, okay.
84 units. And it was like about a $1 million raise.
Okay. So I mean, $1 million raise, that's nothing challenging for you, right? considering
Tim, for me at the time, it was daunting. It was daunting to raise $1 million. You know, I had raised money, plenty of money, but I was raising, you know, $50,000 to $150,000 on a deal. So it was daunting to try to think of raising $1 million on a deal. So it ended up going pretty well. I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I assumed everybody that in my network was just going to invest because why wouldn't they? It's a great deal. Right. So I just kind of assumed they would. I didn't do a webinar. I literally gave them a Word document with a business plan. It was really cheesy now that I look back at it, and I still got people to invest. So, you know,
that's awesome. So, yeah. So let's, if you can share with us a little bit, you know, insight into that. So what year was that?
I think it was 2016.
So how was the investor sentiment at that? Like, I guess two part, because your investors that invested that you were going after, were they more experienced where, you know, there was an investor sentiment that was, you know, that like they know real estate, you know, was working well and that they would get into it? Or was it kind of like in today's market where, you know, a lot of investors are more shy?
Nothing like today's market. No, you know, real estate was on its way up. It had already had its downfall, you know, it bottomed out what, maybe 2013 or so. So things were looking really good. The economy was doing well at that time. So everything was rosy at that time. So it was much easier than it is in today's environment. Now, probably harder than it was maybe just a couple of years ago, but much easier than today. Most of my investors, at least my initial investors, had experience, and a lot of them had experience with me. They had invested with me in flips in the past and done well, and I paid them really good money. And I just took it for granted. You know, I went to everybody who had invested in the flips, and I said, "Hey, this is what I'm going to do next. Would you be interested?" "Absolutely." "And how much?" "Oh, you know, I got 300,000. I've got 200,000. And so what I did is I took those people and I wrote down how much they said. And I'm like, "Oh, I can raise like 1.5 million. No big deal with just those people." And that's what I assumed would happen. So that when that first deal came out, I'm like, you know, "Hey, Joe, here's the deal. I'm expecting Joe to put in 300,000. No, Joe puts in 50,000. I'm like, "Okay. Now the next guy, you know, I'm expecting him to put 200,000 in. No, they put 75,000 in." You know, so it was just an eye opening to see for me, because I maybe was a little too arrogant going into it, that, you know, people weren't going to put all that money. They had $300,000 to invest, but it didn't mean they're going to put it all in. It was just that deal. Right. So then I had to really stretch my network, start going to friends and family, who I really hadn't talked to that much about this. I talked to them a little bit, but not much about it. They knew what I was doing, but, you know, had to go to that network. I ended up raising the money, but again, it was a lot of work. I think I ended up raising it from like 13 or 14 different people.
Gotcha. What would you do differently now if you were to have the opportunity to do that all over again?
Yeah, great question. So there's a lot of lessons to be learned, in my opinion, in that first capital raise. First of all, don't be arrogant. Don't think you can raise that much money. Be confident, but don't overthink what you can do, okay? So think about your network. Make sure you're prepping them. That's the biggest thing. Like, lay the groundwork. I didn't really lay the groundwork. People knew what I did because I'd been doing it for a long time. But it wasn't something I would really talk about. I was never on social media. In fact, I don't even know if I had a Facebook account at that time. I definitely didn't have a website. I didn't think that stuff was important. I didn't want to tell people what I did because I felt like that would, that was me being too cocky or arrogant to them, right? I didn't want to look and feel like I was puffing my chest. And I still don't want to look and feel like I'm puffing my chest, but I do want to be transparent to people. I do want to show people what I'm doing, because I think it's possible for them too. And there's a lot of people that want to get into real estate, but just, you know, don't have that avenue, or, you know, passive is the right way for them to go. So anyway, so people would ask me like, what do you do? And I'd be like, oh, I'm a real estate investor. Oh, you're a realtor. Sure. Now that was kind of my answer. I didn't want to talk about it any farther than that, because I didn't want to tell people I was making money. Just didn't, that was against kind of my upbringing, right? You didn't talk about it. So I lay the groundwork, make sure people know what you do. And I'm not saying just go out there and talk to everybody about it, and that's all you talk about. Your phrase turns blue and people run the other way because they don't want to hear you anymore. Don't do that. But talk to people. Like, people need to know what you're doing first and foremost. Second thing is be prepared. Like, I wasn't prepared. I had literally a Word document was my slide deck. It wasn't a professional presentation. I didn't think there was any need to show any flash, any like, I thought people are just going to invest based on the numbers, right? The numbers tell the story. The numbers, by the way, don't tell the story. Nobody cares about the freaking numbers. They want to make sure they care about like feeling like it's a place they could go to, they could be at, they're a part of something. Like, show them cool pictures, show them the neighborhood, show them like the pool, if there's a pool, like sell the flash. And that's what people invest in. They honestly do. A lot of people, especially in the beginning, think, oh, people are, this is an investment. They're focused on the numbers. The numbers, they kind of matter, but they don't matter. I guarantee you, I can raise more money in Austin, Texas than I can in Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland, Ohio could have double the returns than Austin, Texas. And I guarantee you Austin would be more attractive. And especially if I've got a very nice looking property with a pool and it's cool and it's hip, and I got this kind of just 60s built or whatever, just ugly building in Cleveland, even though it's going to dominate and crush Austin, Texas financially, I'll raise three or four times more money in Austin, three or four times faster. So sell the story to people, sell the sizzle to people, be truthful, be honest. Like, that's super important. And I don't want to make sure people aren't looking at it that way. Like, be very truthful and honest, but we're selling the feeling, right? And then we're talking about the numbers. There's a book called Building a Story Brand. It's a great book.
Yep.
Everybody, if anybody hasn't read it and you're looking to raise capital, Building a Story Brand, I think he says to have a 35-minute presentation, 30 minutes needs to be talking about the story, 5 minutes, if that, are talking about the financials, and that's it, and you're done. So short, sweet, to the point, let's sell the story, not the financials. So, man, there's so many other little things, but Those are kind of the two big things, the presentation and really just building your network, right, and making sure people understand who you are, what you're doing, and why they should get involved.
Right. What about raising money in today's market? I know a lot of people are having challenges. And then there was a, here in Houston where I live, one of these syndicators got four huge properties got foreclosed on. So I would assume, you know, the investor sentiment is pretty low right now. So share with us, what are some of the challenges that you're seeing in the marketplace, and, you know, what are you doing that might be different than what you normally do?
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing it. It's just not the one in Houston. I mean, Veritas, they're a big firm. They lost a bunch. There's a bunch of issues going on right now, and obviously interest rates are a huge challenge. And it's not just interest rates, it's inflationary costs, insurance, property taxes. We're paying way more for unit turns than we ever have. I'm doing unit renovations right now that would have costed me about $8,000 back in 2017. Those same renovations are costing me double. They're costing me $15,000 to $17,000 for the exact same renovation. So costs are up, and that's a huge thing. And so, yeah, there's issues going on. Investor sentiment, people are wanting to have money for the rainy day. There's, in my opinion, there's two thoughts that are happening right now. One, I want to invest in real estate. I'm excited to invest in real estate, but I'm just going to wait because I think a crash is coming. And I'm going to wait till that crash comes, and then I'm going to invest in the sweet deals. The other one is I'm nervous that the economy is going to go through a recession, and I want to make sure I don't use all my liquid capital. So I'm not ready to invest right now because I'm worried about a recession. So those are the two big things you're combating at the same time. And okay, raising capital, super hard. I mean, in 2020, we did a deal. We put it out there. Less than 24 hours later, we raised $5 million. Now we do a deal, trying to raise $5 million. You're talking, you know, month or more to raise the same amount of money on probably a better deal. So wow. I just talked to a guy who's got a great track record, can raise a lot of money, can raise a lot more than me. And he had to do a deal he was raising $30 million for, raised $23 million, got it across the finish line to actually close on the deal. But they're still raising money for that deal months after they closed. They couldn't get to their 30, and they're not even close. That I'm hearing that over and over and over again. So what does that mean? That means that you need to work twice as hard right now to raise 10 times harder right now to raise capital. So whatever you thought you could raise, you're going to cut that down substantially. So how do I close on a deal though? Cause a lot of you're going, I could only raise like $500,000 or $1 million or whatever. And you're saying, I can't even raise that. Well, first of all, anything you're doing right now to grow your investor network, do it way more, dive in way harder. And second of all is you need to build relationships with other people in the market, build relationships with family offices, build relationships with institutional equity, build relationships with pref equity, build relationships with other people in the industry that can bring capital to your deals. Okay. You need to build those relationships. You need to figure out what they're all looking for as well. Okay. And then create your database of like, hey, if we find a deal and it's in Austin, Texas, here's my 10 go-to people, right? Here are my options. This is what these people are looking for. Perfect. So we understand that. So you just need to work a lot harder. You're going to need to go outside of your natural, like I've never had to bring in anybody else to help me with capital before. Well, guess what? Now you do. And that's okay. You just need to understand that and be prepared for it. Because if you're not, you're going to find yourself stuck, losing a lot of potential earnest money and in a bad position. So when's it going to get easier to raise capital? I don't know. But what I do know is if we do go through this difficult economic time and, you know, multifamily, you talked about the foreclosures in Houston, there's been foreclosures other places. If that happens to a larger extent, people are going to go into hiding. And you think right now that, oh, I'm going to take full advantage of it. It's going to be awesome. But guess what? Fear grips almost everybody. And the lesson in 2006 to 2008 to 2010 is most people stayed out of the market till 2013 when the market started going back up. I heard it over and over from these institutional groups. They're waiting. They're waiting. They're waiting. What are they waiting for? They should have been buying like crazy. They would have made so much more money. No, they still did well, but most people are going to wait until the fear subsides, right?
That's you're definitely spot on. You know, the good thing, well, sort of good thing, I guess, you know, even though, yes, people are talking about foreclosures and stuff, but I don't see much talk about how much the LPs are losing in these deals, which is, I guess, is because that would really be scary. if we know the, you know, the behind the scene of how much the LPs are losing on these deals. Unfortunate.
All those LPs in that Houston deal lost all their money.
Yeah.
So whatever they put in, if you put 100,000, you got zero back. You know, I was just talking with a guy who invests a lot with us, and he was a big part of a deal. And I'm not going to go into the details of this deal, but he was a big part of this deal that he decided to invest a lot of money into it, and they ended up okay, but they sold the deal for, I think the investors got 45% of their capital back. So if you put $100,000, you got $45,000 back. And you didn't get your $100,000 back.
Yeah. Right?
You didn't get your principal back plus 45. You just got 45 back. So it's I guess it's a nice tax loss. If that's what you're looking for.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Let's switch gear a little bit. So what are some of your favorite channels of marketing or ways of marketing to attract the retail passive investors?
Yeah. And thanks for saying the retail passive investors, because there's a difference, and there's a difference even in retail, like sophisticated levels. So if you're trying to get the investors that are going to invest $50,000 to $150,000, maybe $200,000, you can go your traditional routes, your Facebooks, your LinkedIns, your podcast, your, you know, bigger pockets, things of that nature, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. So those, what do I use? I've got my podcast, Pillars of Wealth Creation. So it's on all the podcast channels. So I get a lot of access to, or people get a lot of access to me. And then I'm on LinkedIn, I would say is the bigger, in my opinion, LinkedIn is the better one to getting investors, because you've got more professional people on LinkedIn. That's kind of what they're looking for there. Mm-hmm. Facebook, they're looking at, you know, cute cats and dogs and crap like that. LinkedIn, that's, people aren't looking at that type of stuff. It's a business minded social media platform. So I think that's great. I haven't really gotten into TikTok. Well, I did start a TikTok channel. So if you want to check out my TikTok, I've got like 3 videos on there. They probably really suck. But I did post a couple of TikTok videos out there. My daughter's like, you've got like 5 followers. I'm like, amazing. I don't know what that means, but amazing. And then I think, man, I think YouTube, if you can really hit YouTube and do a good job at it, you can do really well in YouTube. But YouTube isn't like you can just throw a video out there. You need to have somebody edit it, or you need to do it yourself. You need to have a great cover, a great hook, right? Podcast is probably the easiest with very little editing. But man, I think you gotta put your time and effort into one thing and really do it well if you want to get retail. Being on other people's podcasts is huge too.
So out of all the ones that you mentioned, you know, having your own podcast, prospecting on LinkedIn, Facebook, being on other people's podcasts, is there one that is your favorite that you found you attracted
your
the
own
most?
Podcast?
Really?
Yeah. That's my favorite, having your own podcast, because it's evergreen. And if you have your own podcast, guess what? You can be on other people's podcasts because you have your own podcast. You can just do a podcast swap. So I think if you have your own podcast, that's a great way to then start hooking on to other platforms. Because I got my own podcast, we can post, hey, we got a new episode that went out on LinkedIn, on Facebook. So we can use our podcast to then go everywhere, as many channels as we want. So that works for me, but I like to talk, so it works too. So
for your podcast, are you the one that generate most of the content, or do you have a good mix of interviews that you do, or what's the format?
Interviews as well. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I do like about having, in my case, this is sort of like a podcast. We do take the audio and turn that into a podcast, but one of the things I like about doing it this way is that it forced me to have this consistency. Like, it doesn't matter if today's my birthday. I did it. There was a day that I had COVID, and so I had to take a nap right before I get on, do the interview, and then go back, take a nap.
That's dedication, man. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have, you know, I have like all these people that are coming on, yeah. right, counting on me to do it. And so, but that's yeah. one of the things I love about it. It's like that consistency.
Yeah. And that's the key to whatever you choose to do is the consistency has to be there. Personally, I think the best way to get investors is meeting them face to face. You have to meet people face to face. So your podcast might drive that, but I'm in Minnesota. I get people from California, from wherever that invest in our deals. But if I meet somebody face to face, the likelihood of them investing goes way up, way quicker. And especially if I get a referral from a current investor or even just a current connection, it doesn't matter if they're an investor or not, but if it's an investor, that's like 99% chance their referral is going to invest. Especially if I meet that referral face-to-face.
So when you say face-to-face, is it in person or is Zoom considered?
In person is the best. Zoom is the second best, but in person is the best. I can shake their hand. I can, meet them for coffee or for lunch or whatever. That's the best, is to get in front of them and meet them really face to face. I think social media is great, but it also makes people lazy. It really does. So stop being lazy and get in front of people. You know, it's so easy to just be like, oh, I'm going to do all this outreach on Facebook and LinkedIn and whatever, and forget that you got to meet people in person. So,
So in that case, what about a local meetup, like a monthly kind of meetup? Yeah, do you like that?
I think that's great. Those are fantastic. Whether you're the one starting it, whether you're involved in it, but you've got to be more involved than just going to it. That's, I think, being a little bit more involved in that, getting up on stage every once in a while if you can, or kind of being a little bit more involved. I think local meetup is great. Really great source, and this has to still come from the heart, but volunteering at charity events, charity type networks, that's another great source. Again, that has to come from the heart. Like if you're only there to get investors, well, first of all, you're a terrible person. Second of all, I don't think it's going to work. So go there and do it from the heart, but understand that there's going to be people there that are probably going to be good potential connections. And here's the other thing. Like I am selling, but I'm never selling. That's not like my spirit is to provide an opportunity. So my thought process is I'm providing investors an opportunity, providing people an opportunity to put their money that's safe and secure and backed by real estate with excellent returns. If that's your mindset, it's a different mindset than, will you invest in my deal? Or I need you to invest in my deal? Or this is a great deal because, no, it's an opportunity, right? They've got a problem. The problem is they've got money, right? And they're looking for a great place for their money to protect it, to provide them a good return. I've got a solution.
Right. That's good. I like that. Yeah. I mean, with anything, right? Think of long-term relationships. So it's not like you're going to go to an event one time, you meet one time and you expect them to invest with you, right? So it's a relationship that gets built over time, that trust gets built. So,
One piece of advice I would give everybody, if I can for a second.
Yeah, of course.
If you're going to be a capital raiser, I think there's two really important things you should be doing. One, you should learn how to market. Okay. Number two, the more important one, because I can hire somebody to market. The most important thing is learn how to sell. Take sales courses. You can learn how to do all this real estate stuff, but if you're going to be the capital raiser on your team, you need to learn how to sell. You need to take salesperson courses. You need to understand that that's a huge part of it. It's a psychology play. right? We're not manipulating people, but we are providing an opportunity, but we do need to nail home that point. The successful capital raisers that I know are the ones that can sell.
So, you know, what's give us a mindset shift, especially for those that are more engineer type minds, like, well, I, you know, I'm not a good salesperson. I don't care to be a salesperson, like this sort of little bit of negative connotation around sales. Give us some of your mental aspect of it, some of your mindset around what it means to be a good salesperson.
Yeah, well, there's two things about it. First of all, maybe you're just not a good salesperson and you can't be, and so don't sell. Figure out something else, right? You don't have to be a capital raiser. You can get into real estate by doing a lot of different things. And I've got two other people in my company, Matt and Drew, and they can both sell a little bit, but that's not their focus. You know, their focus isn't getting investors in the corridor. You know, Matt is focused on getting the deals and being, Matt's kind of the glue that holds us together. He's that systems oriented person. You know, Drew is a super smart dude, finance and all that kind of stuff. So you've got to know your role. So I think that's really important. So maybe you just aren't going to be a great salesperson, but if you're like, hey, I think I'm okay at it, but maybe I'm not great. I think that first of all, the mindset just needs to be, I got to learn it. I have to learn and understand how to sell. Once you start educating yourself, that's where your paradigm can shift. That's where your mind can shift. If you're not educated, if you're not prepared and you start to try to raise capital, it's going to feel awkward. You're going to be not successful and you're going to shoot yourself in the foot, because a lot of times a first impression is the only impression. So I don't want you to go out there scared thinking, oh, geez, Todd just told me I can't sell because I suck at it and I should never try it. No, go out there, learn how to sell, get educated, you know, figure it out, and then start pitching your investors, right? And then start talking about, you can start talking about what you're doing at any time, but it doesn't mean you need to be pitching investors until you're prepared for it. So I think a lot of people hear people talking about raising capital, and raising capital is super easy, but it's also super difficult. So you need to know how to sell and you need to build that credibility. People need to know, like, and trust you, but they also need to believe you. And that's the harder thing, is to, it's not even necessarily believing you, it's to embrace you, I think. And that is where a lot of people struggle.
Right.
So I don't know. I didn't really give you a good paradigm shift, but I think the big thing would be to get educated about selling and understanding the marketing process. And look, I think most people can do a decent job selling. I think there's some people that just never will be. I know them. Like, I'm thinking about them right now, people that I know that would love to raise capital, but they're just never going to be able to be good at it. And that's okay. Again, don't focus on that. If that's just you, like, you got to figure out what you're good at and focus on that, because you're dang good at something else, I guarantee you. But if you want a capital raise, you can do it. Like, this isn't rocket science. This is getting people to believe in you.
Right. That's good. All right. So what about nurturing the leads? What do you do to, you know, once someone connect with you, opt into your, you know, your website or wherever that that you send them to opt in, what's your nurturing process like?
Yeah, and this is something I probably need to continue to do a better job at. But we send monthly newsletters, and the newsletters are positioned as an update. And there's capital. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we've been up to. And then it's education. We pick out several different articles, what's going on in the economy, what's going on in real estate, that type of thing. And then the very end, it's a recommendation for a book and recommendation for a podcast. And that's kind of the layout of our monthly newsletter. We send that, we try to send it every single month. And then we do a, this is for active investors, is we do a yearly investor dinner, investor celebration dinner. So last year we had like 125 people show up, and just a nice dinner, drinks. We had entertainment come, and you know, just things like that to make our investors feel special. That's our current investors that are investing. And that, so that's, I guess that's really what we do, right? Oh, we send out, we actually send out Thanksgiving cards. We don't send out at Christmas time because we feel like a lot of cards are being sent at Christmas and they kind of get lost in the shuffle. And so instead of sending Christmas cards, we actually send them for Thanksgiving, because most people then haven't got their Christmas card and they can still like put it on their Christmas, you know, decoration, whatever they have, if they get Christmas cards. But it allows us to kind of stand out, because nobody sends Thanksgiving cards.
Right.
So we send a Thanksgiving card. We're thankful for you, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's to our current investors and kind of A-level potential investors. So we try to like grade the possibility of our investors to say, you know, this person's been on our list for a really long time. They haven't invested yet. You know, they start to get bumped down into the seriousness category. This person, we had a great meeting. We maybe met them face to face, or maybe they're a referral, but they haven't invested yet. They're going to be like A class, right? Or A grade. I mean, so.
That's good. What about tools? What are some of your favorite, you know, software tools or resources that you use in your business on a regular basis?
Boy, so we use a lot of different things. We use Airtable for a lot of our organization and documentation. We use Google, does Google Suite a ton. So a lot of our files, everything you can find, got a folder, you can find everything on there of ours. For our investors, we use Syndication Pro as the portal that they go into and can look at their investments. For our newsletter, we're using MailChimp. Nothing special there. Yeah, those are kind of the main.
Okay. So you don't do any
that I use,
right? And you don't do any physical mailing. Is that correct? Like the newsletter, you don't mail them physically.
Don't mail. We've not done that yet. I know some of my friends that do it. They like it. So that might be something we do in the future, but we haven't done that yet, other than the Thanksgiving card.
Right. That's good. Okay. Awesome. If you can do it all over again, you reset back to 2008, you can redo all this thing, anything you would do differently?
Man, that's a hard question, because, you know, things have gone pretty well. And here's the thing. Would I have done things differently? I'm sure there's plenty of things I probably would do differently. And I think the biggest thing when you ask that question, what would you do differently, is I would have gone bigger, faster, and I would have really jumped in with both feet. Right. I feel like when I went to larger properties, I kind of tiptoed in and I was pretty nervous about doing that. And you know, but I had two young kids and the family, and I didn't want to mess anything up. So I think that it came with a place of fear too, a little bit. So yeah, I would have went bigger, faster, and just harder into that, to the larger properties. But look, you go through these journeys and through these paradigm shifts as you go. And there's been so many moments of these amazing paradigm shifts for me. And getting there earlier is easy to say in hindsight, but you also have to understand, like, here's what it irritates me when I hear people say, you got to go big. You got to buy these big buildings right away. Because the reality is most people will never buy anything if that's what they have to do. You know, like the Grant Cardone that's like, oh, don't buy that stupid single family or that duplex or Donald Trump or whatever. Like, you know what? Screw you. Buy that. Go buy the duplex because that's going to get you off your butt and it's going to get you to buy the duplex. But then don't just sit there and continue to buy only duplexes forever, right? If you want to buy a 100-unit apartment building, eventually you got to buy a 100-unit apartment building. But don't just say, I can't do anything other than buying a 100-unit apartment building. That's the only thing I can do because Grant Cardone told me to do it. Screw Grant Cardone, right? If he's listening, that's what I said. Call me up.
Right, yeah.
But no. You got to get in the corridor. That's the most important thing. You have to get in the corridor. You have to figure out how to get started. And you can't think bigger than what you're going to be able to bite off. And it doesn't, again, it doesn't mean go buy a duplex and do that for 30 years because, you know, some guy told you to do that. No, go buy some duplexes so you can actually start investing in real estate.
Right. That's good. I love that. All right, Todd, for the listeners that want to connect with you, invest with you, partner with you, learn from you, where would you like to send them?
Yeah, probably the easiest way is you can, well, there's a couple things. You can check out our website, EnduriusCapital.com, EnduriusCapital.com. I can throw it in the chat too. And it's Todd@EnduriusCapital.com is my email. Reach out to me there. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn. Send me a private message that says you heard me here. And otherwise I probably won't accept your friend request. It's just the honest truth. And then my podcast, Pillars of Wealth Creation, you can find it, you know, anywhere. So anywhere you get podcasts. We got an active deal going on right now. So if anybody wants to check that out, just reach out to me. I can get you more information. It's 506C. So you accredited investors only.
Awesome. Yeah. And which leads right into, you know, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today and giving to us. And so how can we give to you? What kind of resources or what would you like for us to do for you?
Man, what a kind question for you to ask. Honestly, you know, look, I'm a pretty simple dude. I don't need a lot, but, listen to my podcast, you know, write a review. If you like it, if you don't like it, don't write a review. Cause I don't want bad reviews. I only want good reviews. Listen to my podcast, check it out. I'd love to talk to anybody. So reach out to me if you want to connect. That's it.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Definitely. Yeah. So Todd, again, thank you so much for doing this interview with me today. We're going to wrap up this segment of the interview again, just really, really appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Awesome. Everyone.